Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. Time to remember this crap. With Mike Donahue. Mike, how are you?
Good, Andy. Back from a short hiatus, apparently. Haven't done this in a few weeks, so happy to fire up the wheel again.
Every once in a while, I just like to tease the listeners, make them wait. And they remember just how much they can't wait for this podcast.
Our good friend Sean McAuliffe was giving me shit about not having one available. So here's to you, Sean, as I flip the bird. There you go. Enjoy.
If I knew it bothered him that much, we wouldn't have done one this week.
Hey, you see what they're celebrating downtown tonight over at the intersection of Kinzie and Wabash and River North, Chicago? The site of a certain restaurant.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. What are they hanging out at? Harry Carey's.
I don't know why this is the date, but apparently now it's been a tradition since Harry died in 98. Where the Weasley CEO of Harry Carey Restaurants, whatever it is, Grant DePorter, seems to have been around forever.
Is he blowing up a baseball again?
No, but I heard a discussion about that on The Score today. But there is this they've managed to make it sort of a thing. So I guess it would, even though it's a cheesy, dumb shit thing, and half the people that, you know, celebrate Harry don't really know that much about him. Kind of what we try to do here, perhaps, to dispel all that. But not that we need a reason to drink or have a toast, but I'll just offer one up to Harry Carabina.
Well, when I heard the lineup, I really wanted to go because Ryan Dempster was going to be there doing his Harry Carey impression.
Yes.
And Danny Bonerchu Parkins was going to be there.
Yep.
Showing off his vasectomy scar. Sounded like a good time.
That's what I was listening to this afternoon. And Dempster, of course, I suffered through the interview. You know, I think, you know, it's pretty clear how I feel about Ryan Dempster. And we've discussed how, you know, how he's doing a third iteration, hack iteration of a late stage broadcaster that just really doesn't do him justice. And it's actually somewhat insensitive and dumb, counterintuitive for the Cubs to seem to, honor him by celebrating this sort of dementia riddled.
That the Ricketts and Marquis are just complete shitbags, that they encourage Ryan Dempster to do a insulting, terrible impression. It's not even good. It's not even a well-executed insulting impression of a
Will
guy
Ferrell.
That they apparently revere so much that they have a creepy statue of him outside the ballpark.
Correct. Yeah, soaring above a sea of tortured souls.
Honestly, if you just came in and you saw the creepy statue and then heard them, you know, basically make Harry out to be a drunken buffoon,
right?
You wouldn't necessarily go, oh, they're really honoring this guy.
No, that would be a charm to fend off evil spirit, basically to say, this is what could happen. You know, you should be horrified from this. You know, let this be a warning to you. It does seem to be how it projects. And just to clarify, it's not even a bad Harry Carey impression. It's a bad Will Ferrell impression of a bad Harry Carey impression. And I only say that because we've discussed it before. It's not, you know, maybe the early Harry Carey is not subject to caricature. It's got to be the bumbling, drunken, late stage guy. But I was listening to Parkins and Spiegel today when they had Dempster on live from Harry Carey's, and they played a clip and one of the bumpers coming out of a commercial of the Will Ferrell one. And you know what? Just listening to it, it's a shitty impression. I love Will Ferrell. All right. He's an icon. He's done so many memorable roles. And this is separate from my feelings about, you know, accuracy or, you know, devotion to, you know, the accuracy or how you portray Harry, but it's like he's dropping, like it's almost like he's got a Southern accent at certain points. It's like not even that good of an audible impression. And I know it's a physical shtick because he's, you know, Harry did have a very caricature-like presentation, especially at the end of his life with the giant glasses and the wild hair. The whole thing, though, is not that spot on of an impression to begin with. Dempster does another generation's worst. It's just shitty and more disrespectful. And like you say, this, you know, the ownership just they cater to it and they pander to it, and it's just mystifying. Like everything associated with Ryan Dempster's success and survival in Chicago.
Yeah, he's awful. At least we have yet to have him on a broadcast, so that's good.
No, we haven't covered 2004 and 2008, but they're two of the 12 segue, two of the 12 seasons. No, sorry, not the segue. We have 12 left, and those are two of them.
It's a big day for Danny Parkins. Today is the NFL schedule release day, and he has a source who leaks the Bears schedule to him just hours before it comes out. And I don't know why we're supposed to give a shit.
Well, didn't it get scooped? I thought it got scooped this year. No, maybe I misheard that. I did hear that.
It's stupid. I mean, the teams have known for weeks. I mean, to the point where they all do their little social media videos and get those ready for the release. And yes. Even if we already know who they're playing, and we know if they're home or away by now, it's literally just what order are they playing the games in. Correct. And they're acting like, oh my God, this is like, he's Woodward and Bernstein digging his shit up.
Right.
Like,
who's his deep throat?
Cares. Nobody cares.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, who would it be? Yeah, wait, you're right. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole because that's not what we're doing. We could do a media segment, local media. We have very hot takes on, for better or worse.
That's right.
Yeah, I did see, though, that the Bears are starting the season in prime time against the Niners. So, and that's all I looked at, you know. You know, and by the way, plug, we do our own football version of this, which is a slightly different tableau, but I'm looking forward to this season because we've done the Bears, remember this crap, for two seasons, and we'll go through each team that they play and sometimes do reruns or skip a week if they've already done it, but there'll be three fresh teams all from the NFC East this year, so... we've never talked about the Cowboys and the Eagles, and actually we've talked plenty about all those teams and especially the Redskins, but haven't devoted. So tune in, folks. If you enjoy our Bears podcast.
Are we going to have to refer to them as the Commanders?
Did I say Redskins? You're right.
In retrospect.
Right. We'll figure it out.
I mean, they were the Redskins when the Bears played them all those times.
Correct. In fact, they've yet to play them have they played them as the Washington football team? I don't think so. They played them as the Boston and Washington Redskins, but never any other.
I don't think so. Year before, we didn't remember this crap. They went to D.C. on a
Thursday night.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the Matt Nagy's playoff team, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, good times.
All right, well, time to spin the wheel and see which Cub team we are going to discuss today.
Only 12 left.
Yeah, there are...
They're kind of spread out, too. Like, you know, it could fall in any number of eras still, even though there's few left. We finally caught up with the 80s. There was a very...
We did 81 last time, right?
Yeah, there had been a very unbalanced, very disproportionate amount of 90s, so we got the 90s out of the way, and now we've pretty much gotten a lot of the 80s. And there it spins.
Didn't mean to spin so fast, but here we go. Oh, we're going to get a playoff team.
Yes, sir.
Kosuke Fukudome and the 2008 Chicago Cubs. And I actually made a little reference to this in the most recent baseball podcast with Dave Brown. I compared both the Cubs and the White Sox panic acquiring Nick Madrigal to something that happened after the Cubs got swept by the Dodgers.
Correct. I just listened to that today, and we'll no spoilers, but you're spot on. It's interesting. It's an interesting period.
Overcorrecting is never a good thing.
No. Right.
All right. So five quick facts about the 2008 Chicago Cubs.
Well, you mentioned Kosuke, so let's just say, oddly enough, there's competition for this, but one of the most memorable debuts on opening day occurred at Wrigley Field in 2008. We'll circle back, but it does involve the newly acquired Kosuke Fukudome. 2008, the Cubs won more games at any other point in our lifetimes up until that point, exceeding the 84 Cubs. So positive season, of course. 2008. Opening day starter remained Carlos Zambrano, who pretty much, I mean, outside of probably anybody, may have started more than any other, but was overtaken in his performance that year by the aforementioned Ryan Dempster, who had his best individual season as a starter for sure, and probably as a Cub, and then proceeded to let it all piss down his leg, which will give the proper treatment. 2008, Cubs made a savvy move in acquiring five-inning pitcher Rich Harden and dumpster-diving Chad Godin.
Yep.
Things went well. We can't wait
to get to that story.
That should be fun. And what else can we say about the 2008 Cubs? Just, it was a playoff team, and they trailed in the entire playoff series for the final, or they never had a lead for the, I'm going to just guess it. We can fact check this, but I'm going to say for the final 23 innings, they did not have a lead. They did have a brief lead. And then needless to say, they did not advance, but it was a playoff team. So
Mark DeRozan, a home run, right?
Correct. 2-run homer. So a lot of ups and downs. So let's see what else we can uncover. It's a positive season. It was fun. But like a lot of seasons, well, for every team, I guess, that are fun, there can only be one at the end that wins it all. But ultimately disappointing, and but really sort of particularly dispiritingly so in this instance, to the point where when I apologize myself about being out of my depth when we, because we, in, you know, we include the years going all the way through 2011, that the years 2009, 10, 11 are an absolute weak spot for me. I can still dig some things up out of my head, but I kind of died after 2008 at that point in my life, after that playoff series. Something kind of died within me that pretty much stayed dormant until the day that Theo Epstein was hired. So that's your 2008 Cubs.
And is Jed Hoyer actively trying to kill whatever that is again?
Well, now we're just back to the 80s. Like, all right, now this is a pattern I can recognize. We've won the World Series. Like, you know, it's frustrating because this is pre-World Series, obviously, right? So a lot of angst. Only 5 years from 2003, which, you know, was so tantalizingly close, which we devoted an entire night's worth breaking down and giving it its proper place. It just never even came close to, you know, once they got to the playoffs. So it's just, and they didn't even win the opener that day. That's the funny thing. I made a sly reference to Kosuke's debut that it is awesome as it appeared was, it cannot automatically just, you cannot automatically say that's the greatest debut on opening day, because of course in 1994, a season that we had covered, Tuffy Rhodes had probably a more impressive debut, I would say, because 3 homers off of Doc Gooden, while not as dramatic as a game tying 3-run homer off of Eric Gagne, is still probably more impressive. But in both instances, of course, and this will shock nobody, the Cubs lost both games.
This was post-steroid Eric Gagne, right?
Right, yeah. So I was gonna inject a reference to that.
Not quite as impressive as coked up Dwight Gooden.
Right, yeah, because, I mean, to be fair, it's a little disingenuous to say that Tuffy Rhodes hit 3 homers off of Doc Gooden in 94. Doc Gooden was a bit of a shell. Of course, it had been 8 years, so it's not like it was just the blow. I mean, he was a lot older. I think when you're living in the moment, sometimes it goes a little bit quicker than it seems. And next thing you know, guys that you root for are old. But in either case, definitely in the team photo for most memorable performances on opening day in history.
Now, this was a Cub team that I think the reason they were so good is they got a career season out of their backup catcher.
Hank?
Yes. Henry Blanco, who I'm going to do something quick here. Let's see.
Okay. Viva la Hank Blanco.
Who, coming into this season, was a career 223 hitter. That actually had come up. He really raised his career batting average.
No, I know where you're going with this, but I didn't Hank originally join the Cubs in 2004 or five. And at that point, when he did, he had the you're the one that
he
taught me this. He had the lowest batting average amongst all major league players that qualified when he joined the Cubs.
It was very bad. I didn't realize he was a 216 career batter when the Cubs picked him up in 2005. He had already raised his career batting average 9 points. And in 2008, Henry Blanco hit .292.
Damn.
With a .325 on base and a .392 slug. If he did that this year, David Ross would play him in center field every day.
I like that. You know, your tongue-in-cheek reverence of Hank really seemed to pay off. He on that very much a positive player for the Cubs. I'm sorry.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Show any reveals, right? No, but he really, you know, it worked. Because, you know, it's not like you glorify backup catchers, but you will also come down very, very, very hard on backup catchers. So, Gabor Bacco.
Worst backup catcher. Baseball.
Unless he's the only one. I don't know. I don't know if we've mined anyone else through these podcasts through the years, if anyone else has come up. I mean, I think for a lot of reasons, comedic, ironic, whatever, catchers, backup catchers, they can be fun to glorify. And Hank delivered, though. Probably the all-time greatest backup catcher. No, Frank Nova might have a word or so to say, but I don't know. I'll put my money on Hank.
They also got only 10 games. Out of Coy Dolan Hill. He had a robust .095 in those 10 games.
But as we discovered before, this is the year after Coy had a huge clutch game-tying two-out hit in the ninth inning in the crazy Rockies game where the Cub fan got his ass beat for trying to attack Bob Howery. But Coy would be on the Cubs, as we discovered, as late as 2009, I believe.
He never went away.
Which is kind of cool.
He might still be on the ride. 2011.
Jesus Christ. All the way to the end.
It was a bad penny. He just kept coming back up. Kind of like Tim Fedorovitz.
Well, and if the one catcher you haven't mentioned so far, of course, is the 2008 Rookie of the Year.
The Rookie of the Year, Giovanni Soto. Is this the year he had the grand slam in the ridiculous comeback? Or was that...
against the Rockies? Was that in May? Could have been. I was thinking about this earlier today, how crazy it is that for a team like the Rockies that is not in the Cubs division and has only been around since 1993, have been involved in some of the craziest regular season Cubs games or games with the Cubs. Because that's one, the day game at Wrigley where they came back. I just talked about the other one with Coy Dolan Hill got the big hit. And then there's the Chris Bryant turning the whole, you know, movement around in 2015.
And his penance is now he has to go play for the Rockets for the next 8 years. Right. Oh, we're going to pay him $200 million.
And what do we care anyway? We got a World Series at the end of that spark.
Well, I care. He's on my fantasy team, and you'll be shocked to know on the injured list once again.
Damn. But,
the Giovanni Soto, I mean, I knew he had a good year. This is a really good year. .285, .364 on base, .504 slug, 23 homers,
damn.
86 RBIs.
Damn, our .869 OPS with 90 RBIs for a catcher who had already hit a 3-run homer in the previous year's playoffs, like Todd Worrell in '86, he played in the playoffs the previous year, but still qualified as a rookie. So, I mean, we obviously must have been super high on Soto with that type of performance. Did seem to fade awfully fast, though, obviously. I mean, how did that happen? That's kind of an odd thing. I've never really honestly given a whole lot of thought. In some cases, it happens a lot to get fat.
He got fat. And he liked to smoke the doobie.
Is that right? Okay.
He got
busted
in Texas for it, right?
Oh, okay. You know, I don't know about Jerome Walton's potential preference for cannabis, but I do remember Jerome Walton also a little chubby after his Rookie of the Year. So,
yeah, among regulars,
kind of a tale as old as time.
A midseason acquisition actually had the highest OPS on the team. We'll get to him in a second.
Not coming to me.
It will.
Okay.
Among regulars, only Aramis Ramirez, 898, had a higher OPS than Giovanni.
So, all right. So for a 97 team, I believe?
Yep.
Not like, that's interesting.
The Cubs were, how about this? They finished first in the National League in runs, second in hits, first in doubles, first in walks. The Cubs! First in on-base, first in slugging, first in OPS. They won the slash triple crown in the National League, first in total bases. And then they really lit it up offensively in the playoffs.
My brother claims, and I don't, and you know, I'll give him some credit for this. He doesn't follow baseball as closely as I do, but he has followed it through the years pretty closely, especially at high moments. He swears that the Cubs were kind of being written off going into the playoffs in spite of how awesome what you just rattled off, the fact they had 97 wins, that somehow, I don't know if we can corroborate this, that they were being doubted going into the playoffs. And of course, in perfect public fashion, they validated those doubts. I don't know. I don't remember that. Right. Because I feel like while they won 97 fucking games and they were in first place all of the season, but I don't know. Maybe some writers saw something we didn't. I mean, the fact that they had so much offensive production and yet Aramis was only their only player that had an over 900 OPS would indicate, you would think that means they had like really good performances above average out of everybody. But wasn't Ryan Theriault their shortstop?
Yeah.
There's no fucking way.
Him and Kosuke were their only regulars who had OPS pluses below 100.
Okay.
Soto 119, Lee 109, DeRosa 117, Ramirez 127, Soriano 120. And then even Mike Fontenot off the bench 131. Micah Hoffpower 136.
That was all September. He had a grand slam against the Mets in September.
So they finished second in the National League in hits, and they were first in fewest hits allowed for their pitching staff. They also led the league in strikeouts. Yeah, they were good. They just didn't translate. I think one thing that possibly had people a little down on the Cubs going into the playoffs was they were a team that felt like they were built for the regular season, not for the postseason, in that they didn't have a starting pitcher that you were going to hop on his back, as evidenced by the fact that Ryan fucking Dempster started the opener.
Correct. And that's only because he had a stellar season. And he did. I don't know what his numbers were. Zambrano was their ace. Zambrano was getting towards the end at this point, which is kind of sad because I kind of feel like he should have had a little bit longer career, even though it was already far longer than Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood. And he was their opening day starter for a long, long time. But Dempster had the better year. Zambrano still had a good year, but it probably wouldn't have mattered, but you never know. I mean, they won 97 games over 162. To get so summarily dismissed in the playoffs, you wonder if a few things were done differently in the beginning of that series, maybe it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to it. Zambrano pitched much better than – it'd be tough to pitch worse than Dempster. He walked seven guys. But every one of the infielders made an error.
Correct.
In Carlos's game.
In like a three-inning span, too. That game was put out of it. We could dive into that. I have a lot of issues to unpack about that playoff series in time, I guess. I don't know. It was a fun summer. Randomly, a lot of things kind of come back to me. We don't have, like, the Aramis homer against the Brewers. That was the year before. I guess one thing we can say is to give context, in case you don't know, this is the first Cubs team in our lifetime that made the playoffs in successive years. And one of the very few that has even been over 500 in successive years. But we talked about the 2007 Cubs, and that was the year in which it was kind of they did make the playoffs. It was a struggle. Lou had to sort of de-dustify the clubhouse for the first 2 months. And then they benefited from a watered down Central, which has never been that great to begin with.
The 2007 Cubs weren't good.
Yeah. And no,
that,
right.
It was a bad team a bad division. The 08 Cubs were good.
They were. Because, they signed Kosuke. They already had Soriano, who was in his prime and would put up monster numbers. He had Ramirez and Lee. Was Dempster a reliever in 07?
Yes, because remember that was Lou all of a sudden during the season announced he was going to make him a starter
in 07.
And then they're like, "Yeah, no, we're not doing that." So they.
But it was a smart move because Dempster had a hell of a year.
They wanted to do it like in the middle of the year
in 07.
Yeah, and they're like, "No, let's wait," and they did.
Well, it probably could have, considering that Rich Hill, who ended up having a great career, but the fact that Rich Hill was your starter in Game 3, who was pretty green.
So, yeah, Dempster was very good in 08. He was 17-6 with a 2.96 ERA, allowed only 174 hits in 206 innings. Had an ERA plus of 154. The only Cub pitcher who had a better ERA plus than him was Rich Harden, who had an OPS plus for the Cubs of 258.
Yeah, small sample size.
5-1 in 12 games with a 177 ERA. Rich Harden allowed 39 hits in 71 innings.
it was kind of fun to watch Harden pitch because he was good, but it was a little bit, it was like a really, really good Scott Sanderson. Like he took a long time because he had good stuff, but he threw a lot of pitches for whatever reason. Because he threw a lot of pitches, striking guys out.
He was on, and they had to put him on a pretty strict pitch count because, much like Kerry Wood, once he got to a certain number, his arm fell off. And
yeah, the turkey timer.
Teams would just try to wait him out, knowing that eventually the Cubs were going to have to take him out.
Yeah.
And he only made 12 starts for them, even though they picked him up. Well, we'll get to this. He was their answer to the Brewers trading for CC Sabathia, who the Cubs had tried to trade for but did not have we're not willing to part with the talent that the Brewers did, of which the only talent that really made anything of it was Michael Brantley.
Okay. And Sabathia paid off, did he not? He was amazing for them. 10-1 or something.
He kind of, the Brewers used him in a starting role, much the way Joe used Aroldis, which was,
correct.
I've only got you for a few months. We're just going to pitch the shit out of you.
Uh-huh.
And they were starting to make short rest down the stretch.
Yeah. He answered. God bless him.
And he could hit. I mean, that would have been fun to have had CC.
As it was. Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer, right? He will be. He got, right? Or no?
I don't know about that.
I don't know. I'm not looking at any figures. But wasn't he one of the last, did he win to like 200 games or 250? I mean, because, he had a pretty good career with the Indians.
Yeah.
And he got paid based on that performance for the Brewers for 3 months. But he probably is.
He won 251 games.
Yeah. He's might be the last of the 250.
Look here at his little, what does Baseball Reference say?
He'll be the last of the 250 game winners. I remember being at a game against the Brewers late in the season because he was on the team and he was batting. I remember thinking, Jesus Christ, like he looks like Prince Fielder in the batter's box. He really was fat. Of course, Prince was a young man.
He falls below their average, like the black ink, he's a 22. The average Hall of Famer is 40. Gray ink, 174. The average Hall of Famer is 185. The Hall of Fame monitor, however, has him at 128. The likely Hall of Famer is 100.
Okay, he's a Hall of Famer.
His similar pitchers are Andy Pettit, Mike Mussina, who's in, Jack Morris.
Yankee fans would tell you that Pettit's the true Yankee and Messina's not, since Messina didn't win a World Series for the Yankees. Sorry. Bob Tewksbury, huh?
Huh? No, not Bob.
You said Bob Tewksbury?
No. Bob Gibson. Difference between Bob Gibson and Bob Tewksbury.
Well, Tewksbury had a couple good years.
Louis Tiant, Dennis Martinez, and Curt Schilling.
Okay. That's a good crowd. You can make the case. I mean, he probably doesn't need like the equivalent of a Harold Baines of a pitcher to like propel him. He might be able to get in.
Well, Ron, let's look at his ridiculous numbers for the Brewers.
He was nuts, And so while you're looking that up, I'll give some context. The Brewers, not just because it's fun to dump on other teams, especially teams like the Brewers, even though I grew up like you did liking the Brewers because they were an American League team and we both rooted for them in the World Series in 82. That was their, of course, first playoff appearance, 1982, for a franchise that had only been around for 14 years. So it's not that bad. The Brewers, again, would not – actually, they may have made the playoffs in the 81 strike-shortened season. Could be wrong. Anyway – they would not make the playoffs after the World Series appearance in 82. They would not make the playoffs correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, until this season. I know you're looking up something else, but
seems right.
I can check. I think they went, yeah. And now, and to this day, they're one of the few teams that have probably worse playoff futility than the White Sox, yeah. Just as far as appearances. And in fact, worse because they haven't won a World Series. But yeah, so the Brewers were always of no consequence, even after they joined the National League. They've been in the National League now for 10 years. They joined in 98. And they're the team that all of a sudden, it's not the Cardinals, who have kind of been out of commission for a couple of years. You know, Tony was probably drinking in a dark room before they sort of mystifyingly reemerged. But it was the Brewers, not the Cardinals, that were nipping at the Cubs' heels.
Yeah, and so I don't know if you remember this happened, but the Brewers, with 12 games to go, fired Ned Yost.
Oh, my God, that's right. And made Cub manager?
Dale Swain, their manager. Because they were choking it away. They're wild.
Were they?
Yeah.
The Wild had nothing to do with the Cubs. The Cubs, obviously, with 97 wins, the Cubs ran away with the division. Yeah.
So here's CC in 17 starts for the Brewers. He was 11-2 with a 1.65 ERA. He threw 7 complete games and 3 shutouts. That's pretty good.
Wow.
But his ERA plus, not as good as Rich Harden's. It was just 2.55. So Harden, Cubs win the trades.
Yeah.
What did CC hit? Because that was the other thing.
The other part of that, by the way, the unintended consequence of the trade is that you're comparing Michael Brantley to Josh Donaldson. So I don't know. All right, because that's the one thing that came out of the Brewers deal with Sabathia and
Eric Patterson.
Cubs
had to give up Eric Patterson. I mean, come on. I
forgot about Eric Patterson.
Where's hitting? I care about this, but
who
standard batting? I just want to see what he hit for them.
Yeah,
229 with a homer and 6 RBIs. I feel like he hit a homer. He hit that homer against the Cubs, but I don't remember. Maybe not. I might just.
I don't know, but I do remember seeing it.
I'm sure he had a big hit against the Cubs.
There was a game down the stretch where I don't remember even the outcome of the game. I remember being there and just thinking he looked like a fielder in the batter's box. He may have even hit one to the wall. That's the thing. That's why maybe I remember it. But yeah, rarefied air for the Cubs, because at this point, like at least for you and I, right, this is only the, 84, 89, 98, 03. They did go to the playoffs the year before, so we're getting a little bit used to it, but it's still kind of rarefied.
Well, even the more second time in our lifetimes that they had back-to-back winning seasons.
Okay, 03, 03,
well,
04.
Maybe you, right? 71 and 72? No.
I was born in 72, but
okay, so
the first back-to-back was Dusty 03-04, yeah. Right, in our lifetimes, let alone our own conscious memory. Right, in my conscious memory, it's definitely – and you're right, I think they were under five. So they – very futile. However, in spite of that, even more rarefied air for the Brewers, yeah. Because, yeah, what the fuck were they doing? So, a little scary.
I mean, this was the second time in Cub history that they had made the playoffs in back-to-back seasons. They also did it in
07,
they did it
3
years in a row, 1906, 1907,
06, 07, 08. Yeah.
The White Sox didn't do it until last year.
Right. Charter franchise.
Please tell me about just how wonderful the fucking White Sox history is. It sucks.
Oh, I've talked about it before.
Well, we've talked about it on here before.
Yeah, here, right. No team of the original 16 has been in few World Series. The White Sox, 5. Even the Indians have been in more than that. So,
how do you think Carsten Charles Sabathia fared in his playoff start against the World Champion Phillies?
They were on the ascension. They were on the ascension, and they are kind of a surprise team in 08, I think. But how did CC Sabathia do against Charlie Manuel, Ryan Thomas, and the Philadelphia Phillies?
He gave up 6 hits and five runs
Ryan
in three and two-thirds innings with a 12.27 ERA.
See, isn't baseball a fucking bitch? One and done. Yeah. He had one shot. It's one bad game, right? Like, he was hotter than shit, and he's got one game that's the game. No pitcher's perfect. All pitchers get lit up, and it just happened to be in a playoff game. Sorry, Brewers.
How about the fact that despite going 11-2 with 1.65, he didn't finish in the top 10 in Cy Young voting in the National League?
That's nuts.
Like, only pitched half a season. We can't vote for him. What?
Rick Sutcliffe won the Cy Young in 84. Of course, he came in late June, but because CeCe would have been acquired probably at the deadline, right? So he had, 2 months?
Must have been before, because the Cubs were able to counter it.
Yeah.
The Harden deal.
Well, the Harden deal was...
Oh, no, we acted too soon. The Cubs got Rich Harden.
Well, the Harden deal was a good deal, though, because he was a legit pitcher. Yeah. All right, so here's where the Cubs are at. Kerry Wood is, at the end, sort of. He's been through... His arm's been blown up multiple days. He's not a starter anymore. The only way for Kerry to draw a paycheck, you can't put that... Right. And they started working him in. He came back from his... I think 32nd DL appearance the previous year as a reliever for the first time. And it's he's got so many bullets in that arm. And, that was when Kerry stopped being a starter. And he was a really good closer, I think, in a way. I mean, you're probably looking at it now. He was an all-star reliever. Interesting. Although
everybody on the 2008 Cubs was an all-star.
Cubs had a lot of all-stars.
They only had one starter, though. Do you remember who it was?
It wasn't Ryan Dempster. I'd remember that. It was the starter.
He got voted in.
It's Koski. It's Koski. Yeah.
So Koski
from an Asian continent. This is early internet. You could probably vote online in 2008. You think or?
I'm sure. Otherwise, how are all the Japanese guys voting for? They weren't mailing. They weren't going to the park and mailing in the ballots.
Right. Or do what I would do. Would you do this as a kid, by the way, for the All-Star ballots? You go to a Cubs. The only way you could vote was going to a game, right, in the 80s. And it had to be during all the election season. And my older brother.
It was sometime in May, because they had to figure out who was going to be on the ballot.
Exactly. And so I remember my older brother teaching me this trick, grab a stack, get a stack of ballots, and then just vote for Cubs, which, is meatballish. You're not actually being objective, but it's you root for the team. Want to see Joe Strain at second base in the 1981
All-Star.
They had
to change the way they did balloting once because the fucking Reds fans voted in all Reds.
Correct.
And it's this is not the Red Machine anymore. Or maybe it's the Free Machine, right?
No. You know what, though? That was in the 60s. That was some weird – so that's the thing. That was what we were dealing with was security proof. If you Google Cincinnati Reds all-star fan voting, that has nothing to do with the big Red Machine, which justifiably probably at least 80-70% of it could have been voted in legitimately. But somehow, whatever antiquated process they had in place for the all-star game in the olden days, the 50s or 60s, the fine residents of Cincinnati managed to rig it. And I think the commissioner may have stepped in, but there is some, I don't even know if that story exists, if it's on the internet. I'm not even bothering to pull it up, but I know that it was Cincinnati. But in our own way, I just remember going to, would go to the handful of games that we would go to back then. It was oh yeah, all-star ballots. I'm going to get not just a Chicago thing, folks, but I'm going to get as many as I can. And I'm going to punch in Ken Reitz. And not that we're big on Ken Reitz, but
so the Cubs all-stars that year were Koske, Aramis Ramirez, Alfonso Soriano, Ryan Dempster, Carlos Marmol, Kerry Wood, and Carlos Zambrano.
Wow.
And there was a future Cub that also got voted in, Dan Heron.
Not Rich Harden. Dan Heron.
Do you know the start? Oh, and Giovanni Soto. I missed him. He was the other starter. Giovanni Soto started.
He got voted in.
I wonder if the other catcher got hurt because I doubt he got hurt.
He did not get voted in.
The pitcher for the National League was Ben Sheets.
I literally thought of Ben Sheets earlier today, honest to God, thinking how he was the Brewers dime store answer for Kerry Wood. I never would have guessed that Ben Sheets would have made an all-star game.
And the manager was the ruddy-faced Clint Hurdle.
Let me guess. I was going to say the manager of the I saved it. I'm clearing out my dad's house. I posted a few pictures on Twitter. I did find the Sports Illustrated with Clint Hurdle. Mystifyingly unruddy as a player on the Kansas City Royals. I think I kept it. So if I go back, I'll have to take a picture.
The American League All-Star team had two Cubs. One was a former Cub. And one would be a Cub the very next year.
In 2009, when they started sliding, was Milton Bradley an all-star in 08?
Yes, Milton Bradley was the DH. And Rule 5, pick up Josh Hamilton, was center fielder for the American League.
That's a good call. Not many fans remember that Josh Hamilton was technically a Cub, right? Which would be unfair to blame Henry for trading him, because the only reason that Jim Henry acquired him in the first place from Texas after he had flamed out from his Josh Hamilton. I don't know why we're talking about Josh Hamilton, but I'm going to finish my thought. He and Corey Patterson were the top two prospects in baseball in 2000. They battled for the cover of Baseball America for a couple of years. Those were your prospects, but Hamilton flamed out for drugs. He was a Tampa Bay Devil Ray. They were the Devil Rays then. And then resurfaced. So nobody really thought of Josh Hamilton when Henry picked him up, but he only picked him up. I don't remember the details, but he intended to deal him to Cincinnati the whole time, and Hamilton went on to have his one
deal. The Cubs had a higher, or the Reds basically worked out a deal ahead of time with the Cubs. Henry would take Hamilton and trade them to him, so it was never taken with the idea that
right. The Cubs had no intention. No. And Hamilton had his renaissance, where he finally figured it out that one year. And was he an all-star in 08 for the Reds, or no? He was with the Rangers by then, right?
Yeah. Rangers. Didn't he get traded for?
It was the Rangers.
Willie Mo Pena.
Which I will insist, I will always call him Wiley Mo. Because he only had the one L.
No, he didn't get traded for him. He got traded for Edison Volquez. That's who he got traded for.
Oh, wow. Yep. Edison Volquez reference. Yep. That's kind of throwing me a little bit.
But yeah, Kerry Wood was the Cub closer that year. A lot of decisions for closer. 5-4 with a 3.26 ERA. He had 34 saves. Struck out 84 in 66 innings.
Yep.
And the Cubs
how many
had
walks?
The Cubs had a good. Let's see how many walks.
I'm just like 18. It always seemed to. Wow. Well, okay. It was exciting.
His control was better as a closer because he could go back to throwing his slurve again because he didn't have to worry about having to
get blow it out.
Yeah.
You know, Kerry Wood, not a Hall of Famer like Gale Sayers, but I always kind of feel a little bit like, God, he had all these like white hot moments and just never quite, you know. But by 2008, we always loved him. So, you know, he was frustrating because of things that he couldn't control, like his health. But I remember thinking, God, that'd be a great ending. Kerry Wood, the Cubs can finally break through. And here's this, you know, this guy that first gave us hope in 98. And, you know, he's going to be closing out games. And sadly, of course, we'll get to it. He never got a chance to close out a playoff game.
No.
So, but anyway.
So, yeah, so it must have been then right. 2007, he told Henry he was done. He was going to retire. And the apocryphal story, at least, is that he woke up and decided to throw. See how the old arm felt before.
I remember. That's a good pull, Andy. I forgot all about that story.
And his arm felt good. And he's basically like, well, shit, I'm not going to retire when my arm feels good. And the Cubs turned him into he was a reliever, but he only pitched in 22 games in 07. But good enough towards the end of the season. And he was on the playoff roster. And he was the reason then that that Lou felt like he could make Dempster a starter. Because he would have – Lou was crafty in that he liked having Marmol be able to pitch more than one inning. So he really wanted Marmol to not be – he wanted to have a closer so that he could pitch Marmol whenever they were in the shit.
Which, let's discuss that real quickly, because it's funny. I've noticed now that it's not unusual at all because of the way pitching is structured for so-called saves guys or closers to pitch more than one inning. And for a while, though, that was rare. And I feel like that began with Tony La Russa's use of Dennis Eckersley. Like, you know, in the old days, we've talked about early days of Lee Smith and Bruce Sutter. These guys would come in for 2-3 innings and get a save. But then after La Russa and Eckersley revolution, it was like you never bring your closer in before the ninth inning. Whereas now, because it's fractured a different way, that's totally fine. It makes sense. It happens probably a lot more than it did, say, in 2008, which is why Lou is like, well, I can't save him for the back of the game because my closer is a one-inning guy, even though Marmol should be the closer. So he was kind of right in his thinking that Marmol can get more than three outs. But – for somehow he didn't feel like it was proper at the time to bring in your closer in the eighth inning, which is fine. He had Kerry Wood. He had a kind of a luxury there, actually.
And I think they were careful. I think they felt like Kerry needed, like, he couldn't hurry him up to bring him in.
Like, true.
If somebody got in trouble, he didn't want Wood, like, hurrying up and trying to get his arm ready.
So, like, more than ever, if anyone needed a one-inning closer, it'd be Kerry Wood.
They wanted
for health reasons.
We say that, and then we probably could look it up, and he pitched a bunch of. But I don't think he did.
Yeah, Lou wasn't that out of the box, but that's kind of a, you know.
Well, Lou invented the Nasty Boys, for God's sakes.
True. Yeah, he took three relievers. You're right about that. And that was that. It's kind of funny. He beat La Russa's A's, who had Eckersley, right? You know, it's funny that it kind of went the direction of La Russa using one closer that way, as opposed to Pinella with three, you know, with Norm Charlton, Randy Myers, and whoever the hell.
All right, so this is interesting. So Kerry pitched Rob in Cable. 65 games. He pitched two innings in. One, two, three, four, five.
Well, he was a former starter. So there's a balance between.
And they're pretty well spread out. One in April, one in May, one in June, and two in September.
Okay, so it's responsible.
But every other time it was an inning or less.
Yeah.
So the majority of his innings were of his starts, he was just coming in for
appearances.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And but while you're at it, can you look up Marmol? Because I feel like 2008 was that peak Marmol. He was so fucking incredible by then. He was the setup man the year before. He was a young guy. I think he came up late in 05. So he was kind of seasoned by 08. He came up in late 05, maybe late
06.
Okay,
as a
it was
starter.
Late. Around the same time as Juan Balls Mateo. Was that his nickname that we gave to him? Mateo. But like, so he was a starter at first, and
they,
then he
made
sort
13
of
starts. And yeah. They didn't go well. He had a 6.08 ERA. They made him a full-time reliever in 07, and he was immediately great.
Correct. But, you know, in fairness to Carlos, 2006 was a very dispiriting end of the Dusty era. Pretty much nobody gave a fuck. So, yeah, so Marmol becomes, out of the blue, this reliable setup man for Dempster. And then kind of with Pinella in the second year, kind of stays in that role now, but it's just for Wood. And he was, I feel like 2008, he may have been better in 09 for all I know, but I feel like this is the sort of sweet spot for Carlos.
He was, his best year statistically was 07, but in 08, he was really good, and he pitched in 82 games. He pitched in more than half their games.
Jesus Christ.
Which is probably why by, what year was he bad? By 10?
But it wasn't injuries.
Certainly by 11.
I always thought that he was so. So what is it? Do we know? Like, I always felt like people couldn't lay off. Like, they stopped swinging. He had nasty movement. He had a really strong fastball, yeah, which you need to build
right
off.
And then
of
he threw his slider. He rarely threw it as a strike, but apparently it looked
they
like the fastball long enough that they always swung at it. And then at some point, enough of them stopped swinging at it. That then he had to throw the fastball, which was fast, but not as good. And
right, but even like Ryan Thiriault can hit it. So,
but I mean, for all of the besmirching that Carlos Marmol gets, once they turn him in reliever, he pitched in 59, 82, 79, 77, 75, and 61 games.
Jesus.
He led the National League in 2010 with 70 games finished. He had a good year in 10. 2.55 ERA.
But I feel like he was starting to like walk guys. I feel like his walk rate started going up by then. He still kept people from scoring. He was throwing a lot more pitches, I feel, is my point.
Yeah, his walk rate was the highest in 9. It went up to almost 8 walks per 9 innings. It had been 4.2 in 08, so it almost doubled, which is not great. His strikeout rate stayed consistent. But then in 2010, he struck out 16 batters per 9 innings. Is that good? That seems good.
That's incredible. All right. So I'm glad we re-examined this, because in my head, I've kind of got my own ill-informed Mandela-affected narrative. It's not necessarily.
But 11 was the year that he pitched the fucking Cardinals into the playoffs. We can't forget him for that.
Yes. No, we cannot.
And I guess we've talked long enough. We've talked around it. We need to talk about a Cardinal who. The Cardinals had traded away. They traded him to the Padres for Ryan Ludwig.
Yep.
And the Padres took one look at him and went, no, you're bad. And they waved him. And Jim Hendry said, I like the cut of this guy's jib. Cub fans love him. Let's bring him in. And the Cubs signed Lassie, Jim Edmonds. And Jim Edmonds, in
he actually,
85
I know he...
games for the Cubs. Well, let's. I want to see what he did with it. He was
Here's
done.
The thing.
He was completely done.
No, but he. All right,
with the Padres,
I'm not,
he hit 178,
right,
hit 265
before he came to the Cubs.
Right,
and I'm. And I'm not. And I do not feel good about defending Jim Edmonds, especially to you. But I got to tell you, yeah. I think you might be willing to give him some grace here. He did perform for the Cubs, which in effect you probably at the end enjoy because that would kind of stick it to the Cardinals in some small sense. I don't know.
Oh yeah, Cardinal fans were pissed that he was a Cub. It really bothered.
Yeah,
them. He was a traitor before Albert Pujols was a traitor. TRADER.
So that's good. My one Jim Edmonds moment as a Cub, you could say that it didn't even happen in a Cubs uniform, but he was a member of the Cubs, but he hit a walk-off against the Braves on a weekday, but they happened to be wearing the 1908 uniforms.
But he was a whale, right? No.
Was that? Yeah, it might have been
Federal. I thought they had the whales federally. Uniforms on.
It was against
the Braves.
He also
had at least one home run in that ridiculous comeback against the Rockies.
He did. Okay. Yeah. The one that.
Two.
Well, let's pull that game up, but also there's the other. I'm just going to drop it in the box. But so you're talking about the game that you think Soto hit a grand slam, but also DeRosa, I thought, did some crazy things. But I found a game that was on June 12th, 3-2 in the bottom of the 11th. I guess our guy, Edmonds. And of course, Baseball Reference isn't going to tell you that. Edmonds tied the game in the ninth.
We remember the game with the weird uniforms. I mean, that's
Baseball Reference won't tell you that, but that they were wearing the, and I don't know if it was the Whales or the 08 Cubs, but you seem to nail it. I bet you you're right. So Edmonds tied that game in the bottom of the ninth with a one out homer off of Blaine Boyer, a game that was eventually won when one of my favorite ways to end a game, and I talked about it when Ray Sanchez ended a game when Rob Dibble hit him with the bases loaded, but Reed Johnson got hit by a pitch by Jeff Ridgway, which scored Aramis Ramirez, in which after the game, the Cubs were 43-24, sitting pretty. They knocked off the Braves, but that was the one game. It's the one game I think of when you bring up Jim Edmonds as a Cub. I thought he walked it off with a win. Turns out he tied it.
Yep.
That's why I'm glad I do this. And I can put one in the books. We don't have to talk about Jim Edmonds as a Cub again. Let's talk about that fun.
Well, no, before you jumped all over me, I was going to say he was done with the Padres because he was 178, 265. The Cubs pick him up, and it's like, why the fuck are we wasting our time?
Right.
This? And
this who I despise probably amongst all the Cardinals.
And
right?
In 85 games, he hit 256 with a 369 on base and a 568 slug. His 937 OPS was the best he had since 2004.
That's awesome. All right. So how do you not like Jim Edmonds a little bit for doing that? As much as he was the reason that we hated the Cardinals.
He got a moment that I'm sure he enjoyed. The Cubs clinched the division at Wrigley against the Cardinals, and Jim Edmonds caught the final out.
I was about to bring that up. Thank you for doing it. You're right. Yeah, had to be said. I mean, I don't know if he had any – well, of course he'd have animosity towards him because they caught him at the end. So he wasn't ready to stop playing. They didn't cut him. They traded him. They got rid of him for Ryan Ludwig. That's funny. So he was motivated to show him up even though he had won one World Series with them. It was – we had to sort of resolve all that. Like, first we got him, and then he doesn't suck. And then, okay, all right, that's good. It kind of worked out, so –
But I think they would have been fine had they not picked him up because they could have just continued to play Felix PA and Reed Johnson in center field. I'm sure that would have worked out great.
Yeah, and even though we burned out on Corey Patterson, a lot of us were still pretty excited about Felix PA, and he was even less impressive than Corey Patterson.
I mean, the best thing about Felix was between every pitch, he completely grabbed his balls.
Was that it?
Hand almost basically rubbing his taint to the
Wasn't
point
he
where
all,
see who
was put
doing,
under the IL.
Who was doing Sorry. Games in 08? That would have been they run Fox
that's,
Chicago.
No, that's
still, that.
Oh, well, it was Len Casper first of all. Len Casper. Well,
I know
and,
who the announcers were.
Bob Brenly, but yeah,
I'm just saying, whatever the network was, literally had to start. We noticed this. They zoomed in on Felix above the waist between pitches because it was they didn't want to, you know, get FCC fines for him enjoying his junk. Yeah, he got hurt, right? Didn't he get hit in the
ball? A twisted testicle.
Yeah.
I found an article. It says, Lou Piniella is calling Paul Sullivan's gingerly referred to it as a personal problem. But the award for most delicately tiptoeing around the issue goes to the AP, which referred to the injury as an outpatient procedure for a minor groin injury. He had missed time because he was suffering from a twisted testicle. Yeah. Now, this is just the Chicagoist, which is sort of a blog-based, but it's a news aggregator. So it's basically, you know, should be somewhat journalistically checks out. But, yeah, so.
I only believe things if they were on Chicago Now.
Well, but that's, there's
Sarah
a reference.
Sarah Spain wrote about it, or Jimmy Greenfeld.
Which might have
I believed. Otherwise, no, I'm not believing any of that.
Good call. I'm wondering if the local Chicago Red Eye was being read in 2008.
Probably.
It could have been. I just think that's almost too much on the nose that Felix P.A. kept grabbing his crotch between at-bats, and then he would later be officially placed on the disabled list for twisted testicle. So some jokes just write themselves.
So was 2008, was that the year? Yeah. This would have been the first of two huge franchise-changing end-of-spring training waiver claims that the Cubs made. 2008.
End-of-spring
2008, and both of them came from the Blue Jays. 2008, the Blue Jays gave up on Reed Johnson, and the Cubs snatched him, and he was a very useful player for them. And then a couple of years later, they waived Louis Valbuena.
Oh.
And the Cubs swooped in, and they solved their third base spot for years based on that one waiver claim. So, worked out great.
I think it might be good to take one game. I mean, I briefly glossed over this game a minute ago, but you mentioned the Rockies game that I threw the link in there. I'm not happy with the winning pitcher, but it probably is one of the more memorable games of the season. Well, obviously of the season, but the Cubs were trailing 8-0 in the fourth inning.
Yeah.
This is on May 30th, the Friday after Memorial Day weekend. And I'm only bringing this game. I'm going to bring an inside reference. And I'll remember that when we would sometimes, you know, Cubs played, even then, played a lot of games during the day. A lot of us, you know, wasted a lot of time following the games, reading, you know, doing the game casts, communicating in various platforms and message boards while the game was going on. And this would have been Mike Brott's Hire Jim Essien shout box. And I just gotten to know our friend. I'm not sure if I should. I'll use a pseudonym, because he's a little bit of a public figure, but Section 242 said that if I was at this game, I'd be gone by the fourth inning. And I was very quick to judge him. You don't leave a baseball game, certainly before the sixth inning. So I was spent the next few years reminding our friend Bill, did I say his name, that he would have left that game early, because they were down 8-0, and some fans would have left. In fact, this day, it was probably really warm weather.
They were down 9-1 in the sixth.
There you go.
But these Cubs, there's no quitting these Cubs. And so in the sixth, why was John Lieber taking such a beating? Good Lord.
Well, John Lieber was in his second go-around.
Oh, yeah, Ted Lilly started.
Lieber
had come in.
Lieber, because it is by codicil, anytime you win 20 games with the Cubs,
get reacquired.
You have to leave. Yeah, you have to leave and then come back as a lesser form of yourself. In some cases, Fergie was lesser, but he was still an effective pitcher. Rick Rushel was lesser, but still had a lot in the tank. Greg Maddux was lesser, but still very good. John Lieber was done.
Yep.
And had nothing, which was sad because I really always enjoyed John Lieber. In fact, he didn't pitch that bad in that game.
Nope. Kept him in it.
He was done that year.
So, yeah, the bottom of the sixth, down 9-1. Micah Hoffpower gets a ground rule double. Must have hit it into the ivy.
Yep.
Kosuke homered to make it 9-3. And then Lassie hit a home run to make it 9-4.
That's the one you referenced.
Well, no, there's more.
And then right, but you seventh, referenced he had a big homer in that game.
No, there's more. Then in the seventh, being down 9-4. Hank White hit a 2-run homer. Now it's 9-6, and Wrigley is everyone believes. And with two on, Jim Edmonds comes up, and he hits a 3-run homer off Manny Corpus, another future Cub.
Jesus.
To tie the game, and Mark DeRosa immediately follows. Well, not immediately. It was no count.
Edmonds hit a double. You misread that. Maybe you're the one who had cataract surgery.
Shit, I thought he had 2 home runs in the game.
No, DeRosa hit the homer. See, I remember DeRosa having a role in this game.
Was it his second of the season?
Still, he had a 2-run double.
So Jim Edmonds, 2. But it was the second of the season. That's what
Yes. But he still had a huge double, so he's having a game.
DeRosa hits the big home run.
And the Cubs are up. That was a go-ahead homer, huh? Yeah. No, they're still down. Right? No, that puts them up 10-9.
DeRosa's homer gave him the lead.
Yeah. And that was it, yep.
10-9.
Mark DeRosa is a guy that I always feel conflicted about because he was with the Cubs for 2 seasons and he was absolutely probably the 2 best regular seasons of his career.
He was good. He was useful because they played him wherever they needed somebody.
Well, he was like a Mark Loretta. He was like a guy, it seemed like probably slightly above average. I believe we discovered that he played against the Cubs as a member of the Braves in 2003, but he didn't seem like anything special. And yet he probably had his 2 best seasons with the Cubs. He was terrific, man. He was just like, he played good defense at second. That was settled. He had big hits. He was a driver of the offense. But in both of those seasons, and I will say that in 2008, he did hit the big home run. In 2007, he had the anxious when everyone, because Cub fans love their like bland white guys like Scott Ayer, who's the winner in this Rockies game, and Ryan Dempster and Mark DeRosa and like whatever. They go on and on and on. DeRosa had a 3-1 count against LeVon Hernandez with the bases loaded. Granted, it was in a desperation game 3 when they're about to get swept, but then chased a ball in the dirt in which he could have just gotten an RBI and taken a base and hit into a season-ending double play, which bothered me because I just feel like he tried to be a hero. 2008 is another great season, and then we'll get to it. We'll get to it in the playoffs. We'll talk about it in a minute, but he made probably, I think, the most crucial of the 4 infield errors. Yes. And I just feel like, God, you were so good during the season, then you just you shit the tub in the playoffs, and yet nobody's going to remember that because you're white and you're friendly and you have good teeth and you're welcome back like Ryan Dempster, but we can yell at Carlos Zambrano at the meantime. Anyway,
the irritating thing was his 4 best seasons came right in a row. 06 with the Rangers, which is the season he used to sign the free agent deal with the Cubs. Then 07 and 08 with the Cubs. And then he was good again in 09, especially in Cleveland.
He continued to be good. Not even again. He was still good.
Then he got traded at the deadline to the Cardinals. 2009.
Oh,
and he made a hilarious. He was bad for the Cardinals, which was great, and he made a hilarious error in the playoffs where he threw a ball into like the 14th row, and that was, I believe, it was the same game. I know it was the same series. I believe it was the game where Matt Holliday lost a game because he got hit in the balls with a fly ball.
Right. Ryan Franklin was the pitcher. Yep.
Ryan Franklin, whose nephew is a top Cubs pitching prospect, by the way.
Oh, who's that?
And they're only Cole Franklin.
Okay.
And the old Cubs only have top prospects. It's going
to
be great. I can't wait.
So DeRosa shitting the tub for the Cardinals is almost like the inverse but similarly valued proportion of Jim Edmonds.
Yeah, it was perfect.
The only thing that would make it exact would be if Jim Edmonds sucked for the Cardinals and then did this for the Cubs. So
the thing that made it irritating was the only reason the Cubs traded him, Lou was pissed. Because DeRosa was a useful player. DeRosa, in both years with the Cubs, played every position except for pitcher and catcher.
You even played center?
Lou played him everywhere. He played all 3 outfield spots.
I know he played every infield. Even shortstop once in a while? All right.
The reason they traded him was this would be late Sam Zell, right? Because it wasn't 09.
Sam Zell still owned the team. No longer Tribune-owned, I should point out, but not Ricketts-owned.
Didn't the Omaha Rednecks take over sometime in 09?
Right. They were Tribune-owned, but it was a period – I don't consider that Tribune. It's Sam Zell owned the Tribune. So, yeah, it was not the Tribune as we know it.
So I won't go into the whole laborious story, but I told it on the baseball podcast yesterday. But I was talking about how there are some people who insist that Nick Madrigal is good because How could he not be good? The White Sox took him with the 4th overall pick in the draft, and the Cubs prioritized him with their biggest asset. They traded Craig Kimbrel to get him. And in both instances, I said, they both chased the same stupid thing. And it was, baseball has become home run or nothing. And here's a little guy who makes lots of contact. Let's go get him. He's perfect. Except for the fact that the little guy doesn't hit the ball very hard, and he doesn't run very fast, and he never takes a walk, and he's just not that good. So right. I equated it to, and after the Cubs got swept by the Dodgers in 08, Dave Kaplan loves to tell a story. The hotel bar is Lou and Jim Hendry and I'm sure, and Matt Sinatra, because he was like contractually obligated to be with Lou.
With Lou.
And I think Larry Rothschild was there too, but he wasn't paying attention to this. Lou was bitching to Jim that he needed more left-handed bats. I mean, that was the reason they got Edmonds. And the Cubs didn't, not only did the Cubs not bring Edmonds back, nobody signed Edmonds. He didn't play in 2009. He came back in 10 for the Brewers and played a little bit in 11 for the Reds, and his career was over.
Okay.
And they're like, we got to get left-handed bats. And so, Hendry's like, I'll get you one. I'll get you one. Because they had Koskinen, who Lou wasn't going to play in game 3, and then at the last minute threw him in the lineup because he didn't have anybody else. And then Koskinen was bad.
I want to sort of litigate the Koskinen, because I feel like Koskinen, I'm not going to draw any parallels to today. It's irrelevant because it's early. But I will say Koskinen, as you said, got off to a hot start, and then he slid, and he got figured out. I know that sounds familiar. I just feel like, by the end of the year, it was like he kind of rebounded, and he ended up having a decent career. You know, he was not what we hoped, especially certainly what he had delivered on opening day.
He had a very hollow career. He had decent stats, but he wasn't.
But I feel like he either got figured out or whatever. They got off to a hot start, gave the Cubs a spark, and then he was like just twirling himself into the ground
literally,
by the end of the
with
season.
With that ridiculous,
like,
weird, loopy spark.
Right. But I remember that there's I have to search my brain for this. I remember thinking that in the playoffs, can we go to the playoffs now? I don't know if we missed it. We covered most of the relevant points, but I want to say that in game 1 of the playoffs, that Lou batted him down in the order, like the punt, like he was mad at him for like just going on a downward decline. But I was like, fuck you. At the end of the day, I'd still rather have him at the top towards the top of the lineup than Ryan fucking Terrio. So correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe Fukudome was batting second, but I feel, on the other hand, that in game 1 at least,
well,
Terrio was batting
so
second.
Bad in the second half. I don't know how you could
justify. I know, but
what, are you going to bat him second just because he's left-handed? That was the whole fucking point.
Yeah.
He couldn't. They
how
they,
bad
you
was he?
Want to play him at all?
I know. I feel like Lou is down on
how many things you want me to look up at once?
Well, I thought you could do that right away. No, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to figure out if that was just, something that I just misunderstood. I felt like at the time that there was some tension between how he batted Fukudome. It didn't really matter, obviously, because they both sucked, Terrio. But Fukudome won the second half.
So we'll start with Koske's splits at the All Star break. 279, 383, 408, 791 OPS. That's pretty good. All right, we can live with that. After the All-Star break, 217, 314, 326.
Jesus.
You going to bat that second? In August, 193, 293, 253. In September, 178, 289, 289.
God damn. Yeah, I don't know what I just thought maybe the playoffs should spark him.
I'm sure there's an argument that can be made. The Lou screaming at him.
Right, in English.
Probably didn't help.
Those are the two black holes, right?
But if you can't handle your manager screaming at you, what are you going to do against the mighty Dodgers? Against Derek Lowe, Chad Billingsley, and Hiroki Kuroda? You're screwed.
Wow. Chad Billingsley. God, I don't even remember Kuroda. I started game 3.
How about this? All right. Here's the batting order. Game 1. Alfonso Soriano in left field. Koske Fukudome in right field. So
that, maybe I had it backwards in my head.
Derek Lee, so you were probably mad that he was batting that high.
That's it. See, happy. Because, in fairness to me, by the time 2008 rolled around, I was 36 and I'd been drinking for a long time. Unlike 1983, or 82, where I'll tell you that Bump Wills, hits went out on Mario Soto right away. my memory can get a little bit fuzzy, but I know that. So I remember thinking that Lou got cute. So it was the opposite. It was that he thought that Fukudomi would turn it around, and he absolutely Kosuke rewarded Lou by absolutely continuing to twirl himself into the ground. So I think I did some revisionist history because I have spent so much time subsequent to 2008 hating Ryan Terrio that I maybe convinced myself that I always hated him. But I guess at the time I was probably advocating Ryan Terrio to riot, second.
Because his name's called the Riot.
Yeah.
I
want to say if we get to the four errors that the whole infield made behind Zebrano's, that I can describe Terrio's, and his is the one that aggravates me the most.
So to finish the story that I was telling before we got out of, before I had to look up all the coast,
which we do.
So they're sitting in the hotel bar, and Lou is yelling at Henry to get him a left-handed bat, and Henry says, "Fine, I'll get you one." He gets his budget for next year, and remember the Cubs had been artificially inflated in 07 and 08 with Sam Zell cash because he wanted to be able to sell him. Well, now they made the playoffs 2 years in a row, and Sam's like, "Nah, stop, we're not spending any money. I'm about to sell this team." So they had to trade someone to open up to free up some money, and they traded DeRosa in what should have been a really good trade. They got Chris Archer as part of the trade from the Indians. Hey, that's a pretty good deal. Then in a panic deal a year or two later, a Cub team that was no longer contending traded Archer to the Rays for Matt Garza.
But may still have been Jim Henry, I believe. But
it was.
Okay.
No, it was still so they opened up money so that they could go out and sign Milton Bradley.
Yep. And we all know how that goes because we've covered the 2009 season, which is basically we've said more than there should be said about Milton Bradley because we pin a lot of the failures in the 2009 team on his presence. So
a big moment in the season was in the visiting clubhouse in Busch Stadium. Jim Henry announced to the team that Milton had been waived and all the players cheered.
As opposed to the news in the opposing team's dugout at Comiskey when Milton almost fought with Lou. The whole thing was a disaster. And you're right. As much as I was mad at DeRosa for just shitting the tub in the playoffs, which apparently I should be more sympathetic. It's apparently a thing that he does because he did it for the Cardinals too. But you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, and it was an overcorrection. It was an overreaction. And who knows what level the team was going on. I mean, you know, we talked about the 84 Cubs compared to the 89 Cubs. The 84 Cubs were on borrowed time. So you had to win now because we're going to get old. Whereas 89 should have been the beginning of something. At 2008 kind of fell. You don't have the biggest window. You know, Lee and Ramirez are young. Soriano's probably, you know, he already signed his big fat contract. So, yeah, you kind of had to win now. I mean, yeah, you did have a rookie of the year in Soto. But I don't know. Offhand, I can't really think the Cubs are – obviously, over the years, they would prove not to be any kind of a robust minor league developing program. So it was veteran-laden team.
If you look at the team they rolled out for game one, Soriano was a free agent signing. Kosuke was a free agent signing. Lee was a trade for the great Hisap Choi.
Yeah.
Aramis was a trade for the great Bobby Hill.
Bobby Hill.
And, others. Kevin
Hart. Right.
Not that Kevin Hart, the other Kevin Hart.
Right.
Soto was their guy. Edmonds was a waiver pickup. DeRosa was a free agent signing.
Yep.
Terrio was their – hey, there you go. There's your homegrown. Terrio and Soto. That was it. And then Fontenot played in the game.
Yep.
Sean Marshall was a Cub farmhand. Ryan Dempster was a free agent signing. A rehab. They signed him after he got Tommy John disease. Jeff Samardzija pitched in game one.
So Samardzija came up late in September and pitched really well, and then he didn't. Then he was gone for a few years, and they made him a starter. But he was effective.
So the 2008 playoff start, the Cubs. Here we go. They're finally going to do something. They're going to win. They're going to shake off last year's sweep. They're going to they're going to win.
First time, we're actually not winning one out of the blue. We're going to build on it. Last year was the step here.
Playing the 84-win Dodgers. The 97-win Cubs against the 84-win Dodgers. First inning, no problem. Dempster walks a guy, but gets a double play. So
Yeah.
We're fine.
We got some good defense behind him.
Top of the second, he walks Andre Ethier. We're not worried about that because it's pop-up and two fly balls, and we're good. Right. The bottom of the second, DeRosa hits a two-run homer off Derek Lowe.
Yep. Cubs only lead in the series. And it was, all right, this is how it should be, right? Now we're taking over the game.
And then we get to the bottom of the, we get to the top of the third, and there's a foul out, and then there's Derek Lowe walks, because, you know, it's always good to walk the other team's pitcher. And then Rafael Furcal walks. Now there's two on, but that's no problem. Martin flies out. Manny Ramirez. Oh, God, remember that. The Dodgers only made the playoffs because they picked up a puffed-up, steroided Manny Ramirez, and then he's about going to hit a home run in this series off the fucking plate.
Well, after it was over, but yeah
but still, right. It was like, oh.
Late in game two. I know.
Bases loaded. the single is two Terrio, so God knows what happened there. But Dempster comes through. He strikes out Andre Ethier, so we're fine.
Yep.
Doesn't walk anybody in the fourth. So there
you go. So he got, that's not the James Loney inning. So he actually got the load of the bases.
So we get to the fifth. Cubs are still up 2-0. And he gets Derek Lowe to ground out. Doesn't walk him this time. And he walks for call. Martin flies out. Jesus, then he walks Manny Ramirez. And then he walks Andre Ethier. And then on a 1-2 pitch, he gives up a grand slam to James Loney, who probably hit four home runs that year. Then he gives up a double to Matt Kemp, and Ryan Dempster's night is done. And his line, our game one starter, the ace, goes 4 2/3, 4 hits, 4 runs, 7 walks, 2 strikeouts, and a home run.
That's almost more humiliating than Greg Maddux's.
109 pitches, he threw 52 balls.
What a shithead. Believe me, if he was black or Hispanic, he would not be being celebrated at the southeast intersection of Kinzie and Wabash. That's ridiculous. How the fuck do we forgive this guy? Now, again, we haven't covered 2004, but he did a similar thing 4 years earlier, which pitched the Cubs out of the playoffs. But for the record, let it be stated that Ryan Dempster, gifted with a two-run lead.
LaTroy, who deserves to wear a lot of shame.
True. Right.
Wears that shame and does not deserve
No. Dempster unscathed. He gets a gig. Fine. Whatever. Just in case you were unaware, people who are listening, Ryan Dempster has done nothing as a player with the Cubs, but ultimately provide a big proverbial kick to the balls, and we've just covered that because they did not recover from that game. Now, not going to put the whole thing on Dempster, although it's fair to say that pretty much just took the wind out of the Cubs' sails. But, you know, they're professionals. They all failed. They didn't come back. They didn't fight back in that game.
Want to go to the second inning of game two?
I do. Was it all in one inning that the infield made errors? Jesus Christ. Did I somehow underestimate the – I don't think so. But it was all pretty early on.
So, scoreless game in the second. Andre Ethier leading off the Dodgers. He singles to right. Loney singles to shortstop again. That's a lot of that going on. So runners to first and second. But Zambrano strikes out Carlos. When you employ
an actual Muppet at shortstop, you're going to get somebody scurrying to cover balls but not be able to throw them.
And then with one out and runners on first and second, another future Cub and the son of Three's Company star Joyce DeWitt, Blake DeWitt, came up.
Nice.
And he hit a ground ball to Mark DeRosa.
Yep. So I do blame DeRosa. That ends the inning.
Yeah, should have been a double play. Instead,
4-6-3.
Ethier scores. DeWitt is on first and Loney's on second. Casey Blake comes up and he hits a ground ball to Derek Lee, and Derek Lee no gets it. E3. So now the bases are loaded. Zambrano strikes out Chad Billingsley. So we're fine there. But then Rafael Furcal singles. Oh, with a bunt single to second base. Scores James Loney. And the bases are still loaded. Russell Martin comes up, and he hits a double that scores Blake DeWitt, Casey Blake, and Rafael Furcal. And it's 5-0 Dodgers.
Kind of the ball game, kind of the series, kind of the season. Why are we not seeing every of the other errors, by the way? I'm looking myself because I feel like they all happened behind Carlos. Did it not matter at some point? Because I could picture Terrio's.
Yeah, I thought that was the deal, was that they all happened when Carlos was pitching.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it, you know, we've proven before Baseball Reference doesn't always quite, even though they're
well. It's weird because they have or, they have four errors listed for the Cubs, but in the
yeah. Okay, well, and then I'm just going to describe the Theriault error. I think it was after the blood started coming. I think it was, so if DeRosa's error is the first, then that makes me even more angry at DeRosa because all he had to do was make a routine double play, pick his team up, pick up, you know, his pitcher, and move on and win that game and make it a different series. But instead, he not only can't field the grounder to start a double play, but he allows a run to score. The inning goes on. It gets worse. But the error with Theriault, I swear it happened. Maybe it's not – he said there were four errors, but it was a ball. I remember being so mad about it because it was like a little bit of damage had been done and somebody hit a chopper to shortstop. And I just remember this fucking Muppet. I know this happened. I don't know if I can, you know, verify. I'm sure there might be a YouTube video. I'm going to research it if there is. But Theriault comes charging the ball and trying to be a fucking hero because that's like it just like he tried to barehand it. Instead of just like to get a double, to try to turn some ridiculously conceived double play to bail, they're like, no, I field it, get the out. I don't know if you remember that.
I guarantee you, it's one of the ground singles to shortstop.
So it's not even technically an error
because he does get an error. He gets it later in the game when Slappy Pierre hits one to him, and he throws the ball away. But not until the seventh inning.
That's a fielding error. It was that's a throwing error. So it wasn't technically an error. In my mind, it was a misplay because...
And Aramis got his error with Zambrano still in the game. It was a throwing error with Chad Billingsley running to first base.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, everybody should. There's no one person. I mean, Ryan Dempster, Mark DeRosa, Ramirez, even Zambrano. I mean, it's hard to ask a guy to just shake it off when they keep crapping
well, especially when it's
behind
Cubs.
You.
That's like the worst possible Cub.
Right. I remember, though, I remember like watching in admiration how well he kept his cool because we all knew how Carlos was by 2008. And I remember thinking like, okay, couple of errors. He's not losing this shit because he would like show up like Todd Walker. He would like show up his teammates, which not cool, but it's still funny. You know, it's just he's emotional. And I remember like how impressed I was that Zambrano is keeping it together. Like everyone's like kind of watching. Oh, is Carlos going to explode? And he kept it together. So it wasn't on him, but, you know, everybody. It was a team effort. I mean, a team that won 97 games and they got completely pantsed by an 84-win team. It requires a lot more than just one or two players. Team effort. So
the Manny Ramirez home run off home plate was in the fifth inning off of Carlos. That made it 6-0.
And that's the 500-footer you referenced, right?
And then Matt Kemp. Doubled in a run off Neil Kotz.
Just depressing.
Cubs finally got on the board. Jim Edmonds doubled, scored Mark DeRosa. And that cut it to 7-1. Cubs are right back in it.
Yeah.
Marmol came in, and the Dodgers got two more runs, and then they ended up winning 10-2.
So, of course, it's not just because we're Cubs fans, but of course, you know, we refuse to. We just saw a disaster, just an absolute nightmare two-game set at Wrigley. But we're not done. Hey, you know, it happened against the Cubs. You lose two, you win three. I remember the aforementioned Mike Brott, Bad Kermit, like really trying to rally with one of his articles, kind of like you did after the Bartman game, where, hey, come on, we got this. It's like, hey, we're down 2-0. We're a better team. All you gotta do is win three games. Can you just edify me on how game three starts? Because I feel like, all right, Rich Harden, all right, you're our guy. We traded. Let's turn this around. Let's shock these fans of LA. And I feel like that game ended in the first inning. It was like they just quit. Like, I don't know what the Cubs did in the top of the
top of the first. With two outs, Derek Lee doubled and Aramis walked. So Soto comes up with two on and two outs, and he grounds out to third.
Okay.
Harden pitching the bottom of the first for the Cubs. Got for call to pop out, but he gave up a double to Russell Martin. Manny singled. So runners at first and third. Strikes out Andre Ethier. He's just got to get James Loney out again, and we'll be fine. Loney doubles, scores two runs. Come down 2-0, and they would eventually lose 3-1.
Yeah.
Their only run would come Daryl Ward, a pinch hit single in the eighth.
Glad we didn't make it through this podcast.
And then Ronnie Cedeno got to pinch run for him, and he stole second base.
Wow, and he didn't get tagged.
So there you are in the eighth, it comes down two runs. Mark DeRosa is batting with Ronnie Cedeno at second base, but Jonathan Broxton struck him out. And in the top of the ninth, with the season on the line, the Cubs, Terrio struck out, Kosuke grounded out to short, and Alfonso Soriano struck out to end the season. And then somebody, Gary Wood, took a bat and destroyed the water fountain in the tunnel to the between the Dodgers visiting dugout and the clubhouse, flooded it, and the Cubs had to pay for the repairs.
Can we confirm that Kerry was the one who also bashed Sammy's boombox in 04?
Your buddy Paul Sullivan never commented. He's always been the key suspect.
Because I thought it was either him or brain dead Michael Barrett. Other thing that I never, it probably occurred to me at the time, but it's an insignificant fact that has been lost through the sands of time. But you mentioned Rafael Furcal, who the Scipio Nation had once nicknamed Furcalholic. Yep. Also the leadoff hitter a previous time in which the Cubs had played the in the playoffs. He was the Braves leadoff hitter in 03.
That ended much
better. Forgot that he was still hanging around in 08. So. Anyhow, yeah, just a dispiriting finish.
One thing we don't know about the Sammy boombox incident, though, was there's always a possibility that Carlos punched Michael Barrett into the boombox. And we have ruled that out, because that could have happened.
What you could rule out is that such impact gave Barrett brain damage, because it's pretty clear that he always had brain damage. So there was no harm there, but... Yeah. Michael Barrett, of course, about a year and a half gone from the 08 Cubs, because, you know, the Cubs kind of got lucky there, because we talked about 07 when Zambrano punched Barrett off the team. They had no answer, and they're like trying guys like Rob Bowen and
yeah, they had a couple of had a week with Rob Bowen, and
then, you know, Coy Dolan Hill, who turned out to be like a cockroach. But and then they got lucky with Soto, and Soto was their guy.
Well,
in 08,
but they got but
Jason Kendall.
They got Jason Kendall.
Yeah,
they got,
and we talked about
they got
that.
With Captain Caveman.
But Soto ended up being the guy, and then he was the guy there. And it's just funny how quickly that flamed out. I guess that's a tale as old as time, though. I mean, people, you know, come and go. You know, Jerome Walton, Giovanni Soto, Bob Hamlin. Remember Bob Hamlin? He was a rookie of the year for the Royals in 94.
Oh, do I remember Bob Hamlin? That was my Frank Schwindel comparison.
That's okay. I think that's where I got reinitiated to, right? Kind of a fat guy, or just he was a rookie of the year at the age of 28.
He was a guy who had almost exactly the same amount of games that Frank thrilled Cub Nation. Hamlin had a huge run, and he ended up winning rookie of the year. And that was one of the other stats which I amazed David Brown with, was for seven seasons, Ken Griffey Jr. was playing in the American League and was younger than that year's rookie of the year. And one of the reasons was because Bob Hamlin and Marty Cordova towards the end of it were old rookies that helped him. But that just showed how good, how fast Ken and Jr. did not win.
Well, that too.
His first season, he played just enough games to be to burn his rookie status. And his next year, he had a ridiculous year that almost won him MVP. Of course, he would have won rookie of the year.
Right, yeah. Shout out to my brother-in-law too. I've referenced in the past. He's an Expos fan, but he grew up in Southern Cal. A high school teammate with Bob Hamlin, but that also proves that Bob Hamlin had to be an old rookie of the year in 1994, because my brother-in-law is quite a bit older. Not quite, but he's 5 years older than me, and he was, in fact, Bob Hamlin was 26 years old, 1994. So the Frank Schwindel comparison, pretty apt.
Yep.
That's an old rookie.
How many big league seasons do you think Giovanni Soto played?
He played for the White Sox at the end, I remember. He played a long time, didn't he? Did he not?
Yeah, he played 13 seasons in the big leagues.
Yeah. He went from rookie of the year, future star, to just an ordinary, like a Hank White. Was he an everyday catcher most of those years?
No, he stopped being an everyday catcher when he left the Cubs. He got traded to the Rangers, because everybody gets traded to the Rangers.
Seems that way.
For Jake Brigham and a player named... Later, at the 2012 deadline. That was the end of his full-time, although he was the catcher for the Rangers the rest of that season.
In 2010.
But then he was in 12. And then after that, he was a backup for the last, whatever that is, 6 years of his career. So basically half and half. He was a starter.
Right.
And
well, he needed
to make good
money
as a backup catcher, and he did.
Yeah, absolutely.
And right. he's going to be in some ridiculous like some celebrity home run derby thing. He's the Cub that's going to be in it. They have an alumni from these
How
teams.
Does he qualify?
Giovanni Soto is the Cub alum who's going to be in the home run derby.
I'm sorry. What kind of look at like is like that's crazy. Like it's a very obscure type of a player. Is like Stubby Clapp going to represent the Cardinals?
Let's see. There's a it's a Home Run Derby X. It's a global tour featuring former players, and it's only stars. The guys who are going to be going around the world. They're going to London, Seoul, and Mexico City. And the there's one, two, there's four of them. Adrian Gonzalez, Johnny Gomes, Giovanni Soto, and Nick Swisher.
Wow. That's quite a motley crew.
Yeah. So.
Well,
Giovanni still cashing checks. Good job. Good hustle, Giovanni.
Yeah, happy to hear that. You know, we haven't had too many rookies of the year, right? Like, Carey was an exciting one. Jerome Walton was the first, I believe. Mark Pryor was not one. Chris Bryant was a rookie of the year. Yeah, we'll celebrate him when
Joel
we can.
Walton was rookie of the year.
I mentioned him. Yeah,
we did.
And yeah, and for a while, of course, the Dallas Green era, we had a lot of candidates. But
Patrick Wisdom was rookie of the year last year, wasn't he? No, he did get votes.
He got votes. He was almost the Bob Hamlin rookie of the year. So yeah, that's one of my takeaways from going over this team is that I guess I kind of forgot like how quickly Soto fell off the map. That's how strange that seemed to be. Catchers they have a limited shelf life anyway, just by nature of their playing their position. But as you said, that's really not that unusual because it happened to Walton. It happens to guys. A little bit of success, and you kind of lose your work ethic.
The Cubs, they may not have had, they've had a few rookie of the years, but they dominate the list as far as rookies of the years who either, who at some point in their career played for them.
Oh.
Like, for example.
Ben Grieve?
For example, yes. Chris Bryant, obviously. Craig Kimbrell. Chris Coughlin.
Oh, yeah.
Giovanni Soto.
Yeah.
Dontrell Willis.
Was Ben Grieve not the 98 rookie of the year when Kerry Wood was the National League?
Yeah, we haven't gotten
Eric
Hinsky. And then the double in 98, Ben Grieve and Kerry Wood. Nomar. Yep.
Okay.
Almost Hideo Nomo. I remember that. You know, they had him, he was at Iowa and
he
wanted to be brought up and they wouldn't bring him up at that moment, and then he left and he was actually good then for somebody. I forget the Red Sox.
Oh my God, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that.
Eric Karros?
Sure, 92. That was during the Dodgers streak where the Dodgers had every rookie of the year beginning with Rick Sutcliffe in 79. The aforementioned Steve Howe, who refused to throw me a baseball and then blew the game. 81 for the Dodgers was Fernando, and then Steve Sachs in 82. And then they had another era like 10 years later where – Karros was the first one, then Piazza, then Mondesi, and then future Cub, Todd Hollinsworth. How'd you forget Todd Hollinsworth from the rookie of the year?
Oh, yeah, I zipped right by him. Todd Hollinsworth.
Yeah.
Right before, years before Karros.
I'm sorry. Hollinsworth was 96.
Yep. He was the end of their.
Right. So the Dodgers actually surpassed their 80s run by going 5 years in a row with the rookie of the year in the
90s. So Jerome Walton, Benito Santiago.
87. Former Cub or future Cub at that point.
Rick Sutcliffe.
As I mentioned.
Andre Dawson.
Oh, that's right.
Gary Matthews.
Wow, I didn't know Sarge was Rookie of the Year.
Does Lou Piniella count? Probably not.
Well, he was Kansas City Rookie of the Year. 69, I think.
Ken Hubs. Came up as a role. Billy Williams. Yeah. How about the Cubs had back-to-back rookies of the year?
They did. And then Hubs died after a second year. They also brought up Santo and Lou Brock around the same time. That we've mentioned that. That was a brief window where the Cubs actually had some development competency. But
did Orlando Cepeda ever play for the Cubs?
He did not.
No.
Now, I think you've done good exhausting that. But it is exciting, like I said, when you're an actual Cub and you win Rookie of the Year, because then our hopes are high. And we have no idea that you're going to eat so many Doritos while you're baked over the course of the next 3 years that you're not even going to – like Gio was motivated enough to, like, continue to work as a backup catcher, but he obviously lost his edge where after winning Rookie of the Year, he was, you know, no longer a starter within 4 years. That seems odd, if you ask me. But whatever.
It looked like he was pretty good as late as 2010.
Okay.
Then the catcher is tough. Can get beat up as a catcher.
You do.
Yeah, 2010, 17 homers, 53 RBIs, but he had an 890 OPS.
Yeah.
Almost the same counting numbers in 11, 17 homers, 54 RBIs, but he only hit .228. He only had a .310 on base. He was falling off the cliff.
A little less lucky. It was all downhill. You look at that 80. I mean, I'm looking at it now, that 08 season, that is an absolute high mark. It's incredible. It's something worth discovering or discussing somewhere else with by other people, how you can win Rookie of the Year, and that maybe Joe Charbonneau would be his comp. Some guy that wins Rookie of the Year and then just can't even, never even matches that OPS, because he had an 868 OPS and never after that. He did have it. I'm sorry. My apologies. He had an 890 in 20. He was a better catcher than I remember, but even in 2010, he wasn't even qualifying for a batting title. So. You can disregard it.
I got to remember this. I'm going to remember it either right or wrong. So remember the infamous – here it is. I can pull up the box score. So the infamous wild card game in 2014 with John Lester pitching for the A's.
Yeah, when everybody ran on him.
And it was because Giovanni Soto got hurt.
Gio was supposed to be their catcher.
Soto started the game and got hurt, and they brought Derek Norris in. And as soon as they switched catchers, the Royals just started a running, because at that point, people hadn't really figured out that you could run on Lester. It's like people hadn't noticed. Jason Stark was like the only person who noticed that he hadn't thrown to first base in like a year.
Yeah,
but teams weren't taking advantage of it. And all of a sudden, when Soto left the game, Ned's like, "Let's start running." And they stole.
But I always thought it had more to do with Lester's refusal to hold runners than anything to do with Gio Soto. So that's an interesting angle, because I think of that game and I do think about how it really exposed Lester's refusal to throw to first, not knowing that Gio is actually the starting catcher and that he might have somehow mitigated that. Is what you're saying, maybe? That it wasn't.
No, what I'm saying.
It wasn't like their game plan was to jump on Lieber from the beginning. It was that once Soto went out, then they exploited.
That's right.
Sounds
the
like.
Stolen bases okay. started after. So Soto got hurt.
So it sounds like Derek Norris is way more suck-assy than Soto. Then the issue is Lester can't hold runners on.
They stole one base off of Lester and Soto, and then they stole 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six off of Norris, and although they only stole three bases off of John Lester. The rest came off of Luke Gregerson, Sean Doolittle.
Okay.
Jason Hamill. That, I think, is why Jason Hamill, another future former and then future Cub.
Right. At that point, he was.
So that is why the Derek Norris Giovanni Soto thing has always persisted, is because it didn't just happen when Lester was in.
Correct.
It happened after he left the game. In fact, but more.
It's kind of unfair for Lester, because it seemed like Lester got tagged with that stigma. I mean, and it was certainly deserved, because there was no question he did not check runners.
That's about the time then they started making a big deal, the fact that he wouldn't.
Right. So, like, maybe his inability sort of gave them the motivation. Also, during that game, like, fuck it, let's just go. Like, and they became aggressive, because that was a weird way to win games in 2014, to steal bases all of a sudden.
One of the guys stealing the bases was a future Cub superstar, Terrence Gore.
Who could jump over? No, I'm thinking of Joey Gathright. I was going to say jump
Terrence
over.
Terrence Gore
is
the asshole who wouldn't not swing at a full count. When
correct. Don't trigger me. God
when
damn it. I think
he would have walked,
successfully
and then he would have scored, and they would not have lost to the Rockies.
Well, he would have walked, and then he would have been on third base like two pitches later.
Yeah, and then he would have.
We'll take our chances.
The Cubs would have tied the game. We know he would have tied the game.
Yeah.
It's all his fault. They would have won the World Series. And all the guys would still be there.
That was their only playoff
game. Joe would still be managing. Chris and Anthony and Javi would still be playing for the Cubs. And Terrence Moore fucked it all up. Way to go,
2018, it was our only playoff game, and it very much felt like the 2008 playoffs, frankly. Cubs couldn't hit, and just it was very frustrating. And
they hadn't hit for 2 months.
Correct.
And they had blown the game the day before against the Brewers because they couldn't hit.
Yep. Well, and I referenced when Carl Edwards got traded. There was that game on Labor Day that turned that season. But we're not here to talk about the 2018 Cubs. We're here to go back a decade. There are some similarities.
Or comparing them to the 2008 Cubs.
Yeah, no, right. But I was about to go. I was about to go down the rabbit hole where Carl Edwards couldn't throw strikes
He's
on
back.
Labor Day.
He's a national.
I know. And it compelled me to make a comment that I'm convinced that Carl Edwards, his inability to get the 30th out in the 2016 World Series always messed with his head. Because he had a few moments, like walking Yu Darvish to the bases loaded in the next year's playoffs and the Labor Day game the following year, that whenever it was a big moment, Carl couldn't do it. We didn't, kind of like Ryan Dempster. So let's just double bring that analogy back, because Ryan Dempster in pressure situations. And we will go again in detail when the wheel falls in 2004. But he had every opportunity to set the Cubs on the right course, a 97-win team with a 2-run lead, and he couldn't fucking throw the ball over the plate like he was paid to do.
So we should wrap this up by going through the roster and enjoying some of the 2008 Cubs we haven't talked about. We did talk about Reed Johnson. This was the year of the ridiculous turned over. This was the catch
was
in
it?
Washington, right? Where
I think you're right. I think you're right.
His cap got – he hit the wall so hard with the front of his hat that his bill of his cap stuck straight up.
He got scrunched cartoon style.
Everybody loved Reed Johnson. I believe was the year that he stole the grand slam from Prince Fielder on Sunday Night Baseball.
Oh, wow. Good call. You might be right. I can't verify that, but I'll go with it.
We have not talked enough about the other half of the Cajun connection, Mike Fontenot.
Yeah.
Fontenot had a good year for the Cubs that year. 305, 395, 514, 909 OPS in 119 games. Not an insignificant.
I always kind of liked Fontenot compared to Theriault, but it is also funny how much the more things change, the more they stay the same, that you could put Fontenot on top of Theriault's shoulders and still not have a full shortstop. And today, you could put Nick Madrigal on top of Nico Horner's shoulders and still have maybe a full-sized middle infielder. So, but yeah, Fontenot, because the funny thing was Fontenot and Theriault, both diminutive, both middle infielders. Both were teammates at LSU also.
The smartest man in baseball, Ronnie Cedeno, played 99 games for the Cubs that year. We talked about Darrell Ward, who the year before had a great year as a pinch hitter for the Cubs. He did not have such a good year in 08. But, part-time player, it's tough to put up consistent numbers. He had 260 for them that year. Felix Pie played in 43 games for the grabbing his balls. Micah Hoffpower, as you said, was a late-season call-up and hit 342, 400, 534. He was clearly the best player on the team.
Right, and I don't know why Lou wouldn't play him. Again, I think he may have hit a granny in September in Shea, but September was a nice month for those Cubs. They could
he was playing
course,
in that. He started that Rockies
game. He got called
game.
Up earlier. You're right.
Because he was in the middle of the big comeback. Eric Patterson.
That's true.
Played 13 games before being traded to the A's in the Rich Harden deal. Matt Merton. Right.
Yeah. I noticed Merton's name when I was going through box scores that we hadn't mentioned him. He was the Cubs' leading hitter in 2006 as his first full year. He might have been a rookie and then continued to just try to single himself to success.
He was clearly the key piece in the Rich Harden trade. It was Matt Merton, Josh Dent, future. I guess Josh Donaldson was rookie of the year. He was just really good. Josh Donaldson, Sean Gallagher, and Eric Patterson to the A's for Chad Gaudin and Rich Harden.
Christ.
Turns out that while the Indians may have thought that the Cubs didn't have enough to get CC Sabathia, the best player traded in either of those trades was future Indian. I think he played one stretch run for them, Josh Donaldson. They would have been better off to have taken the Cub deal and given the Cubs CC Sabathia, and then the Cubs, he could have lost game one for them instead.
Imagine if we had Josh Donaldson and Chris Archer. Or not. Don't imagine.
Cubs didn't need Donaldson because they had Gio Soto, and Donaldson was still a catcher. They hadn't moved him to third yet.
Got it. Got it.
Do you remember Casey McGee?
I remember the name. I could not have placed a year on.
So one of my favorite things about
McGee. MCGMC, capital G-E-H-E-E, right?
Yeah. It's just McGee, but it's spelled McGee. Right. The Cubs took a – Henry took a bunch of shit because they – I believe he was a end-of-spring training cut the next year, right? I'm going to look and see when the Brewers signed him here.
He's another like a Schwindel Ortega wisdom rookie.
He got lost right after the end of the season, around Rule 5 time. And
that's too bad.
He tore it up for the Brewers in 2009. 301, 360, 499. And it's like we were just giving guys away the next year for the Brewers. He hit 23 homers, drove in 104 runs, hit 285.
That's why I remember him. He was one of those frustrating guys. Yeah, one of those frustrated guys where you're not mad at your team for getting rid of him. You're mad at the player for like sucking and giving nobody any evidence that you're any good and then being good after they tell you. So
he had two really good years for the Brewers, and then he was terrible. He did not play in the big leagues in 2013, but in 2014 he had a resurgent year with the I think they were still the Florida Marlins at the time.
Could have been.
And he won the National League Comeback Player of the Year Award.
Wow.
Despite hitting four homers.
Casey McGee, he won.
He drove in 76 runs on four homers.
Former Cub.
He had a .355 on base that year and a .357 slugging.
This is former Cub generic farmhand Casey McGee, who would go on to have 100 RBIs and win a Comeback Player of the Year.
All after the Cubs released him.
Unreal.
Pitching wise, we didn't talk about the great Jason Marquis. He went 11-9 with a .453 ERA. Was this year two of the Jason Marquis experience?
Year two for sure.
And he had a 3-year deal, and I don't think year three ever happened. It didn't. He got traded to the Rockies. Oh, I remember that. He got Glendon Rush and Jason Marquis came back, I believe, for opening day, right, in 2009?
Glendon Rush? Really?
And they got booed at opening day. And it was Glendon Rush, the last thing that happened to him with the Cubs was he had some kind of health event, like a heart attack or a stroke.
He may have.
In the weight room. And I'm like, why are we booing Glendon Rush? This just seems cruel.
We've become so jaded, maybe.
The Cubs traded Marquis after the 2008 season for Luis Vizcaíno, who played for like a week.
Yes. Game. Not to be confused with Aroldis Vizcaíno, but yes.
Let's see. The bullpen, Bobby Howry was in a year two or three, and he was not good anymore.
No, he wasn't?
No.
In 08?
He'd been really good in 07. Him and Stevie Ayer, both. They were both pretty bad in 08. Howry is 7-5 with a .535 ERA. Stevie Ayer, 2-0 with a 7.15 ERA. Not good.
Yeah. I hated Scott.
Yeah, John Lieber came back to make 25 relief appearances and one start for the Cubs. That did not go well.
No.
And the guy we haven't talked about, Chad Gaudin, was the other guy they got in the trade for Rich Harden. And Chad Gaudin was early on with the Cubs really good.
Very good. And like keeping things going and fortifying the bullpen. Hey, I like this. He might be as valuable as Harden, who was the starter.
And then after just one night, the Cubs come back the next day, and Chad's hurt. Mysterious back injury. And the story would get out that he was outside of a bar, and he tried to jump into a dumpster.
Right.
And he hurt his back.
Just like one of the dumbest injuries.
When he I really
have a bad taste in my mouth about that.
It must have happened on August 29th because he was out for a month. And when he came back, it was no bueno.
He sucked.
Yeah, he made 5 appearances in September, and his ERA was 15.75.
I remember and
he did not especially make the playoff roster.
Especially once we got wind of the rumor, how angry I was. I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, I'm not saying you should wrap yourself in bubble wrap. You're making millions of dollars. Go out and enjoy life. But like his penchant for being a shithead, it seemed to mess them up. I mean, it's a little thing. I'm sure it's nothing. But like, he was pitching really well. And he was, you know, Rich Harden was the centerpiece of that deal. But then Gaudin was like a Godin was like a an unexpected surprise, and all of a sudden
it was like a nice, just a lottery ticket. Like, ooh, look at this! And then we find out player.
And then we find out that he got hurt because you're just being a drunken shithead. And it just gives you a bad feeling. Like, God damn it! Like, you know, and that's not why they. I think we've pretty much nailed why they, you know, played themselves out of the playoffs right away, and it rhymes with Schmein Krempster. Because really, if you want to blame one guy, it's him. Honestly, I'm not just trying to do a shtick here, but it's
Chad Gaudin would pitch 7 more seasons in the big leagues and win a ring with the 2009 Yankees.
Kind of annoys me to hear that.
Although he did not pitch in the World Series.
By the way, I apologize. You were right. The Phillies of 2008 that knocked out the Brewers were in fact World Series.
I thought it was
champions.
Because that was
they lost to the Yankees the next year for Joe Girardi's only championship.
After the Cubs got swept by the Dodgers, the Dodgers were playing very well against the Phillies, and Matt Stairs,
yeah.
Basically kicked him right in the balls with that.
Sorry to so arrogantly dismiss that. Now that I think about it, you're absolutely right.
And then they had the most ridiculous World Series ever where it would not stop raining. And they played in the mud. And that's when Bud Selig changed the rule now that if a World Series game, any World Series game, is suspended by rain at any point, they resume the game.
Okay.
They never wipe out part of a World Series game because of rain. If there's a rain delay and you can't resume that night, when you start up again, you start right where you left.
Yeah.
Because they were making the Rays and the Phillies play in mud up to their ass.
In a World Series, which is pretty unprofessional. I guess we should mention, to cap it off, that 2008, although our beloved did fall short and frustrate us and create all kinds of heartache, it is interesting to note that Joe Maddon became a bit of a thing by leading the Rays to the World Series. So there's a little bit of synergy there. Come home to roost within a decade, but... Yeah, you're right. The Phillies won those series in 08. It was 09 where they lost the Yanks.
Yes. I do think that the 2008 Cubs would have not been a good matchup for the, maybe that's what your brother? Whoever was saying they weren't.
Well, he just thought they weren't getting respected coming into the playoffs, even though they won 97, the Dodgers won 84. And then they went out and proved it.
I think that people were...
The Phillies. The Phillies were legit.
Yeah,
I remember the Phillies.
If you get to the LCS, you might be in trouble.
I remember the Phillies starting to turn the ship around the previous year, and I'm like around the same time as the Cubs, but they just kind of like the Dodgers or the current Cubs. They kind of became the team, at least in that window, that we were hoping the Cubs would become.
I don't know, man. Maybe not. Maybe is this right? The 2000s?
I don't know. They went all the way with a half asleep geriatric manager, and Charlie Manuel.
Well, it's funny because they won the World Series that year, but that was that before they got Cliff Lee, or was that when they must have been the year they got Cliff Lee? I'm
trying to down the stretch, way. Down the stretch.
I think it was before they got Cliff Lee.
Yeah, I don't know that
the Cubs would have faced old friend Jamie Moyer because they had Cole Hamels, who was Cole Hamels by then. He would win everything, right? He was the NLCS.
Right. He was the World Series and the World absolute 100%. Yep, that I know.
So they would have had to be.
And Moyer, for his credit, in that 08 series, I believe, he got one start and he had a hell of a game. So good for him.
Rotation kind of dropped off after that.
But you're right. Cliff
Brett
Lee
Myers before he punched out his wife in public. Adam Eaton before he, or maybe after he cut his leg
open. The pitcher
or
the shithead outfielder?
No, the pitcher. Who went on the disabled list because he was trying to open a CD case with a knife and he stabbed himself in the leg. You would have gotten vintage Brad Lidge, however, 195 ERA. Yes.
Post Pujols homer, but he still was good.
Yeah. Ryan Howard was kind of good that year, I guess. He had 48 homers, 146 RBIs. The always wet Chase Utley, 33 homers, 104 RBIs.
Yeah, he was a good team.
Jeff Jenkins was an extra man for them.
Oh, so Taguchi. He played in the 1998 Brad Brown game.
Aforementioned so Matt Stairs. Taguchi finished up his career for them. From the White Sox?
Well, and so Taguchi, who was a former Cub, or probably a future Cub at this point.
Pat Hughes. Huh. Played him. That's Pat's. Yeah. Well, that's so Taguchi. Yeah, we got it, Pat. It's hilarious.
Wow. Cliff Lee, 43.2 war. So according to the Harold Baines principle, Cliff Lee should be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, Cliff Lee was really good.
He was good.
He's one of those guys who, like, his him and Roy Halladay both, which is ironic because they would both pitch for the Phillies eventually, were these highly touted pitchers who fell on really hard times, and it looked like they weren't going to make it. And then all of a sudden,
and yet they roared
back and then had incredible careers. So,
Yeah, it's a good point that even if the Cubs didn't shit the tub against the Dodgers, you hit it on the head. It's the best way to summarize it. They were built to win 100 games, not built to really – I mean – maybe that's an overly trite way of putting it, because how do you really build a team that can win in the playoffs but not get to the playoffs? But I think whether it's the Phillies would have bounced them.
But I mean,
the Brewers might not have.
You do wonder if they had actually, if they had been the team that got CeCe, how much does that change?
Oh my God, he's
pitching against the Dodgers in game one instead of having to pitch against the Phillies, and he wins it, and you're up 1-0, and the whole series flips. Yeah. And then you get Dempster in a more comfortable spot. He's a game two or three starter instead of a one.
Yeah.
So it's all all Henry's fault. He needed to get it. Didn't get it. Way to go, Jim.
He didn't have the bullets. I don't know how much of a prospect Michael Brantley was.
Well, but that's his fault. Because he had been before he was a GM, he was a farm director.
Well, and he obviously underestimated probably Josh Donaldson. Nobody knew that Josh Donaldson would become such a great player. He was so far from the big leagues.
I've always been a proponent of the fact every fan bitches when their team makes a trade and one of those players goes on to be really good. And I've always been a proponent that has to happen. Every once in a while, a guy you trade needs to turn out to be good, or otherwise nobody wants any of the shit from your farm system.
Right.
If you're trading guys and they all suck.
Oh, the Braves. We've talked about
that. At some point, teams are like, I'm not trading with you. Everybody we get from you blows.
You basically talked about how John Schuerholz built a whole foundation of
getting
prospects
Peter Gammons to tout every Braves prospect pitcher was the greatest thing ever. And everyone would get all excited, and then they'd suck.
And it wasn't just the Cubs that got bamboozled, although they did quite a bit.
Only guy he traded away, I shouldn't say only, but like the best example was, Wainwright actually, but that was towards the end, was Jason Schmidt.
Oh, yeah. And
He turned out to be pretty good. Yeah. But everybody else is like, who the fuck are we getting? In fact, Steve Stone famously said during a broadcast, if the Braves call and offer you a pitcher, hang up.
Yeah.
And he wasn't wrong. Yeah. He was probably looking at Micah Bowie or Joey Nation when he said it.
Yeah, or Andy Pratt. There are multiple trades.
But they were famous for it. They were shipping those guys all over, and everybody kept falling for it.
Yeah.
Well, but soon the Cubs are going to be the Jed's going to be wheeling and dealing with all these top prospects. I mean, I don't have to tell you that everybody knows the Cubs have like the top 100 prospects in baseball. It's ridiculous. It's embarrassment of riches. They're all playing at Myrtle Beach somehow. I don't know how they have 100 guys on the roster, but they're all there.
Right.
And 6 years, woo! Nobody's gonna be able to beat the Cubs. It's gonna be
like crazy. I heard, like Owen Casey gets to have a juice box if he colors within the lines. That's got some time to go.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we thoroughly covered the 2008 Cubs.
I think so. Frustrating, fun. Like
another
any
one of those seasons
season.
That was a lot of fun until the very end, and then you look back on it like. Ugh.
But like
the Cubs had a really good way of ruining your memories of really fun seasons.
It was so much swifter. I mean, no season exemplifies that more than 2003, which was like
the worst ever.
So fun and like so tragic at the end. This was so swift at the end. It was almost like you didn't know what hit you. And yet we spent all summer like atop the National League. And
the 2003 Cubs, we haven't done them yet, right? when
we did the 2003 Cubs. We're up all night.
3 hours long. I'm sure I said this at that point. If they had simply lost like 4-1
right,
to the Marlins,
right, right,
everyone would look back on that as like the, well, now obviously it would have been surpassed by the 2015 and 2016
right, right, right,
Cubs. No. But that would be like the season you look back on. God, that was fun. Oh my God, that was amazing. Yeah. Remember we beat the Braves?
We won a series.
We beat
the
100 win Braves.
Yeah.
But instead you look back on it like those fucking losers. They did it to us again.
Yeah.
They ruined it by winning. They won too many games.
Right. And they just got 10th.
It's Randall Simon's fault.
Right, Randall Simon, and
he doesn't hit that home run, and they win game.
That's
they
right.
Win game
three. Four or game three, yeah.
And they
yep. And
just
then
piss
Ramirez
it away in
the
normal
grandstand.
Fashion. We think they're amazing, but
right, yeah, they basically replicated the '84 Cubs, but they could have just gone out in five. We would have been happy.
But so, they had the advantage. They would have always had the advantage over the '84 Cubs, in that they had won the first playoff
correct.
Series in Chicago since. What, the 17 White Sox, right?
In baseball, yeah, 17 White Sox. I never considered that before, but you're right.
I mean,
yeah, but like
nobody remembers that.
Part of you almost begs for that kick to the nuts, as opposed to the mouse fart that the 2008 Cubs ended the season.
Yeah.
It was just so dispiriting.
I mean, after the grand slam, they
never recovered.
Didn't win a playoff game. They went
0-6
in the playoffs,
and they hardly led.
And then the end of the dynasty, I can't see me make the air quotes, went the same way. They just kind of went out with a pfft.
I know.
But they obviously, they have the ultimate.
At least they like, put one in their pocket.
Would you like to look at our trophy? We actually
right.
won a trophy. So
right.
they that shuts everybody up. And it should.
Right. These teams didn't even win a playoff game.
No, they didn't win a fucking thing. And I love Lou. He's one of my
me too.
My second favorite Cub manager of all time. I love that dude. I was so happy when they got him, and he changed everything when he showed up, just like he was supposed to, but they just couldn't win a playoff game.
No, it was, yeah, it was really so disappointing that at that point in my life, I was like, I was kind of checked out for a few years.
And
so
then,
whenever the wheel, whenever
the
wheel
ultimate,
falls,
he just quit.
Yeah.
Mom's sick, going home. See if Quaddy's in
halfway,
charge.
Halfway through 2010.
Talk to the hairless guy. I'm out of here.
2010 is the only is one of the three seasons in which I don't really have any firsthand memories. Someday the wheel's going to fall on it. I'll do my best.
I'll just have to do all the talking.
Yeah, that's fine. That'll be good for
it's
once
be
for
all
a change.
Mike Quaddy all the time. Because we already got to beat up poor Mike with his bad season.
Oh, 11.
Yeah.
Yeah. His one
he
his
was
one
in
full
his glory in 10.
His yeah, right. His one Joey El Malfitano season. When, very very similar to El Malfitano, where the ownership was like, we're leaving anyway. Go ahead and manage
That's
the
exactly
team next
what
year.
It was. It was let the new guys figure out who the real manager is. Let this let the
I'm not giving anybody a multi-year contract. We're out the door.
Let the creepy hairless cat manage the team.
The Sphinx or the Lynx or whatever you, whatever. So Siamese cat or I don't know. Lynx, I guess. That's a bald cat.
I don't know what they are. They're creepy.
Yeah.
All right. I will leave everybody with that.
Perfect.
Many of us have herpes.